My name is Yisrael Campbell, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And this is my home group. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary purpose is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be of helpful to your recovery and to your understanding. Rob will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Elise will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Elise, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
The 12 steps. One, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Marla will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is Marla. I'm an alcoholic. 12 traditions of AA. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Tanya.
Hi, I'm Tanya. I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, AA, this program, the steps as outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, fellowship, sponsorship, I have not had to pick up a drink, or I haven't picked up a drink since May 6, 2002, and for that I'm incredibly grateful. And if you knew me then, you would be grateful too. Because I was a crazy lady. This is awesome. AA has been the biggest buzz of my life, the best high of my life. And just seeing all of you out here, I don't know a lot of you, but I do know you. And that's this thing, this connection. That's just awesome. That's hard to put into words. AG, thank you so much. And Debbie, thank you for having me here tonight. I said a little prayer earlier today that my ego would be removed and the fears and wanting to sound good and to be light and that I could just be of service. And that's what I asked God to help me do this evening. You know, in 10 minutes, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, I drank a lot. I drank and I drank and I drank. And I don't want to talk too much about the war stories. We all have them. But I was thinking this past week of a couple of highlights to just kind of sum it up. And I used to think, oh, the story of Tanya, you know, my story. I was born in Rahway, New Jersey. Yeah, where there's a big prison. And I was born, and if you were born to hippie parents that were 18 and 19 and didn't know what they were doing, and all these things about my story, if you knew my story, and that's why I drank. And actually, what I've come to find out, and it's really helpful to get a sponsor, because I did not understand what alcoholism was or is. I knew I had a really big problem. You know, that alcohol is just a symptom of a much bigger problem, which is mostly my self-centeredness in me, which I had no idea how self-centered I was. So I never felt a part of, right? And I hear a lot of speakers say that I never felt connected. Right? And there was a part of me that liked that, I think. Even getting sober, I was like, I'm unique, I'm different. Let me tell you my story to my sponsor, you know? Like, but wait. And this whole process has been a leveling process, realizing that, you know, I'm a worker among workers. I'm an AA among AAs. And that's been very, very cool thing to find out, because it really just takes the pressure out of life and trying to be something. You know, I got to do something with my life. You know, and as I discovered my powerlessness with alcohol and my powerlessness with a lot of things, I actually felt a new sort of power filter in. But so I never felt a part of, and I discovered what alcohol could do for me at the age of 14 when I was starting high school, and two of my best friends decided they didn't want to be friends with me anymore because they were going to be popular and cheerleaders, and I didn't make the cheerleading squad. So I started hanging out what we called back then the burnouts in Edison. And I was at a party. And I wanted to be accepted and feel a part of, and I was drinking Meisterbrau beer, and Pink Floyd, The Wall was on, and I proceeded to get that warm, fuzzy feeling, and I started to feel like a part of this group. That's all I ever wanted to do, was feel a part of and connected, and ultimately love. And things happened that evening that shouldn't happen to any 14-year-old. When I woke up and found out what happened the next day and my parents were involved, I felt the guilt, shame, and remorse that I would continue to feel for many, many years, and that vicious cycle over and over and over again. And I did not see the truth of what alcohol was doing to me. I could only see what it was going to do for me. And that proceeded for 15 years, right? The progression. At 18, I moved into New York City to become famous. And... one thing I should say, I was a dancer, a professional dancer, classically trained, for those of you whose minds might be wandering. Like, ballet train. And I got offered a scholarship in New York City with a well-known teacher, so I moved in. And I thought the best way to go about this was to get a job, and my first job, waitressing job, was at the White Horse Tavern. And when I sat down for the interview, they said, you know, Dylan Thomas, a well-known Welsh poet, drank himself to death here. Should have been an ominous warning, right? I thought, cool, this is the place for me. And so on my way to becoming famous and a dancer and a performer, drinks started to take a more important part of my life, and the progression set in, and the White Horse led to after-hours clubs, led to just the lower depths of hell. And it was scary, and I couldn't see a way out. What happened was I thought I'd get married. I married another alcoholic, and I didn't think it could get worse. It did. I got divorced. I didn't think it could get worse. And this is just my story. For 2 years straight, I drank round the clock, 24 hours a day. And I didn't realize that shaking in the morning, I thought it was just being anxious, was the alcohol not being in my body. What happened was I finally thought of something else besides myself, and I said, dear God, kill me or get me help, because I can't live this way. And I don't. I was at that crossroads where I didn't know there was an answer, that there was a solution. I found my, and it wasn't a series of coincidence, I believe it was the grace of God, that got me into an AA program. My mom had been in Al-Anon, and, you know, she left little big books around all the time. And I sat in a meeting in Hoboken, New Jersey, called Fog Lifters at 7 in the morning, shaking, terrified. I couldn't look up. I had a baseball cap on and sweats on, and the people in that room smiled at me like they're smiling tonight, and they said, welcome, we're so happy you're here. And I thought, oh, God. And these women just smiling and throwing numbers at me. I remember writing down blonde chick I like, you know. Like, I didn't even know who they were. I was just like, she's kind of cool. So what happened was I got even sicker without the alcohol in my body. I moved in with another alcoholic, and we both were living in untreated alcoholism, right? That's really terrifying. And, you know, I was throwing things and I felt like, well, there's no alcohol in me. Now what's the problem? And then I ended up in a big book workshop, and my life changed forever. And the late, great Howard G. took me through this book, and his sponsor was Joe of Joe and Charlie, and I got the message very clear. I was ready. I was ready to hear it. And I grasped onto AA, and I did AA really, really hard, and I really annoyed a lot of people. I was just so excited about this book, and I slept with it. Yeah, I still have it. You know, I have my first. I just love this program because it's. I read a lot of spiritual books when I was active, and they'd have like wine stains all over them. Like, where is God? I know there's got to be something else. You know. And this is the only thing I've never tried to mess with. I mean, you know, I had sponsors I didn't want to listen to, for sure. I didn't want to listen because the truth was scary. And the first time I said, hi, I'm Tanya, I'm an alcoholic, I cried. Because it was the beginning of getting truthful. And, you know, you say to thine own self, be true. And it's freeing. And it's to this day, you know, 6.5 years later, I don't like to see the truth, you know. I don't, you know, there's things and relationships that don't happen and things that I want. And I'm like, ugh. But I know that when I let go, the plan is much better than I could possibly imagine. And it's not just for me. I'm not special. I'm not unique. I do what I was told to do, that I hear the people that have the light on and that are smiling and that are living happy, joyous, and free do. Work the steps, work the steps, work the steps. Be of service, be of service. You know, dying of oneself is true living. And for me, every day, that's a battle. I get up every day, and so does my ego and my self-centeredness. And what it's like today, the past 6.5 years have been a trip, man. Fasten your seatbelts. It's a trip. I've got to live in different areas. I've made many friends in this program. I was engaged, and then I was not engaged, and I started a business, and you know, today was a really good day. there's a page in the book, and I won't quote, I don't like to quote pages and stuff, but page 52, and but I will anyway. It talks about, you know, a feeling of uselessness, of not feeling like you had trouble with personal relationships. You know, as the inside started to change, the outside started to change. And that's the miracle, I think, of this program, was because I could not change my thought process about drinking. I couldn't see the truth. I couldn't see the mental obsession I had with it and with a lot of other things. And it's only been through this program, from the women in this program, especially a big thanks to, that taught me how to speak and how to dress and how to live. I'm incredibly grateful for and the sponsorship. I wish you all many days happy, joyous, and free. Thank you so much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Adam.
Hi, I'm Adam, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay, my sobriety date is June 13th, 2006. I am on the ninth step. I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. And my sponsor is Stephanie P., and Atlantic Group is my home. I also have the privilege of sponsoring two amazing men, Stephen and George. And, you know, I just want to say I love AA, and I love my home group. You know, you all saved my life. You know, what I learned here is, you know, in this book, was that I suffer from alcoholism, which is it's a progressive and fatal disease that centers in my thinking. And I need to be sponsored, I need to be doing service, and I need to be working the steps. So I stay away from a drink, because, you know, for me to drink is to die. And, you know, I'm just really excited to be here. I'm really nervous. I'll just get that out there. I hear that's God shaking the truth out of me. So, you know, I'm going to start with step one. You know, I'm powerless towards alcohol, and my life became unmanageable. I believe I was powerless from the very start. I remember my first drink. I was 8 years old. I was sick, and my mom came in to me, to my bed, and I was on a waterbed. This was, you know, the late 80s. And she handed me this this sifter of brandy, and there was an etched sailboat on it, and it was beautiful. And I just remember, I remember every second of it, and it was a magical experience for me, and I remember drinking that, and I remember the feeling, and I remember loving the way it made me feel. And, you know, from that point on, I started stealing sips of my father's beer. I started taking pink, or white Zinfandel out of the box when my parents weren't home. And it just, you know, it progressed, and I liked the way it made me feel until I found my first friend with a fake ID, and he became my best friend very quickly, and he got me my first, I guess, liter of Southern Comfort, and I drank it really fast. I had a small party, and what I remember from it was that I finally could live in the world that I was presented with. I always felt uncomfortable in the world that I was living, and I finally liked the world that I was in. And, you know, from that day forward, I lived from to the moments that I would have a drink when it was like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then for those moments that I was drinking. That's what I lived for. And, you know, I went to college, I started drinking a lot, and, you know, during this time, I was living with an alcoholic mother. You know, it was very mommy dearest, you know, a lot of passing out, a lot of screaming at each other, and me calling the cops because I thought she was dead, and you know, she ended up in rehab institution, you know, home confinement for 2 years, then jail for a year, jails. And then she died when I was 19 in an accident to her head. And I had to take her off life support after 24 hours because I was her only heir. Seeing that, you know, self-knowledge availed me nothing. I used that to empower me. I felt entitled, so I drank more. I went off to college. I started drinking daily. And I got pulled over for a DUI and decided that I needed to move to New York City because driving was my problem. And so I did, and I got here, and I could drink the way I really wanted to drink. I, you know, bars are open until 4 o'clock in the morning, and you know, what my drinking looked like was, you know, it started off that I would, you know, I would either have a few drinks, or I would get drunk and I would black out or pass out. You know, those are my options. I didn't know what was going to happen, but that's how it started. You know, and at the end, what it looked like is I would either pass out or black out, which was the good option. And then the other option was that I would disappear for 3 days. And, you know, I worried a lot of people. I destroyed a lot of relationships. I estranged my family, just like my mother did. And I didn't identify with that at all. I didn't see my part in anything. And, you know, at the end of it, I ended up in the hospital twice for, you know, drinking-related activities. I walked out into the middle of traffic, and I got hit by a taxi, and I went home. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I went home, and I woke up, and I couldn't walk. I had a meniscus tear in my left knee, but I went to work. And eventually, they sent me to the emergency room. That's what you do. But I didn't know. I didn't get it. You know, things were getting really bad. And I remember in February of 2006 or March, I was sleeping and I had a vision. And the vision was that in April, when my birthday is, my mom came back to me. You know, after 8 years, and she was sober. And it was the first time I had ever seen anybody sober. And she had tried AA, and it didn't work for her. And I woke up, and something had changed in me, and I knew that recovery was possible. And, you know, in June of that year, I ended up, from a friend of a friend, really odd coincidences, I found out she was going to this, you know, fantastic meeting in the Upper East Side, and there was, like, beautiful people there, and I was desperate, and I latched on. I came here, and I met all of you people. This was my first meeting on a Tuesday night, and I was scared, and I sat here, and I heard the message. I heard the solution, and I went to walk out the door, and I was stopped by a man, and he said, "Do you want a sponsor? Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And I said, "Yeah, okay." And I went to walk out, and he said, "You know, your life doesn't have to be like this anymore." And I knew that he knew what he was talking about. Like, it's like he looked into me, and he just knew what my life was like this entire time, how painful it was. And for the first time, I said yes to something for myself. And I went home, and like many times, I would have that bottle. I would dump down my mom's bottle down the drain until I started stealing it. Then I went home, and I had a bottle of, like, $3 wine. And I went and I poured it down the drain. You know, and that's the, you know, the last time that I've ever, you know, had alcohol. And, you know, from that point forward, I haven't, you know, had the need to pick up. And, you know, it says in the big book, it says, you know, when the idea of, you know, the true nature of one's disease is implanted in the, you know, the mind of another, you know, that's how we recover. And I, you know, it just wasn't the same anymore. And, you know, when I got to the second and third step, it was like, you know, find a higher power. And I was like, you know, you want me to put my life into the hands of something that, you know, I can't see, hear, touch, feel. And it was, and I, you know, I was one of those agnostics. I thought I was atheist. I was, you know, I thought I was like punk rock, like Nine Inch Nails, Tori Amos, and all that growing up. And I looked at myself, and I was like, and I was taking my contacts out at night. I was brushing my teeth. I was cleaning my room. I got an HIV test. I was going to the doctor, you know, after a few months being here. And I was like, I thought to myself, you know, you haven't been able to take care of yourself for 27 years. You know, what makes you think that you're doing this now? And, you know, it was like, I became willing at that point to just move on. And like when I did my third step prayer, you know, when you find somebody with a fake ID and they're going to get you that alcohol, and you know everything's going to be all right. Like that's that feeling I got when I did the third step, because I just knew everything was going to be all right. You know, I was going to get my fix. You know, and it's been ups and downs. I took an inventory, you know, in 4 through 7, and you know, asked God to remove my character defects. Started to see my part in a lot of things, and started to see where you know, where I was like my mother. And, you know, I had, you know, I've had beautiful, amazing things that had to happen to me since I've come to the program. And, you know, one of that has been, you know, making amends. And, you know, I had wondered how I was going to make amends to my mother, you know, after, you know, she'd passed away. Thank you. And, you know, my sponsor, you know, took me to Pockets of Enthusiasm and was like, you're going to apologize to her on the beach because the beach was her favorite place. And I apologized to her. And I felt stupid. And then the next thing I did was I found the man, the name of the man who sang Ave Maria at her funeral. And I found out the tree that was planted in at her memorial, because I didn't care about those things before. I was so cut off from my feelings and from the world. And then what I did in July 2007 was I visited my mom's grave for the first time in 9 years. So something was wrong, and you know, something just wedged loose when I got there, and I cried for the first time for her, you know, for her life, and I was able to bury my 1 year coin there, and then I returned, you know, this past July, and I buried my 2 year coin, and thank you, and you know, I love all of you. Thank you so much for giving me my life back.